again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. Storyboard 30 is taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the nonprofit multimedia publication that focuses on our local arts, community, and culture. And I'm your host, Mark Fleischer. As humans, we all know that death and dying are always a part of life, a bookend to the lives we live. And no matter your age, as we get older, we will inevitably have to say goodbye to a loved one. Friends, family, brothers, sisters, moms, and dads. And as tragic as they are, these life events are also profound, accompanied by unexplainable connections, moments of deep reflections, or even spiritual awakenings. Or, depending on your definition, and regardless of your religious beliefs, by the presence of angels. A new book by our friend and author Susan Cushman explores this phenomena in an anthology that captures the perspective of a couple dozen writers and poets who offer their personal takes on angels that have touched their lives on or around those moments of life's ultimate destiny. The book is called All Night, All Day, Life, Death, and Angels. Susan and I sat down at Playhouse on the Square in June 2023 on a day and during a time that also carried particular meaning for me. Her book and the stories within deeply resonated with some of my own recent experiences, and I have no doubt that will resonate as well with many of you listeners. Susan, welcome back to Storyboard 30. Welcome to Playhouse. And well, it's an overcast day, but we have a nice view of Overton Square, so welcome back.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, great to have you back. So, my goodness, your book. Let's talk about, actually, let's go back to 2016.
16.
And your first conversations with Cassandra and how this came about.
Cassandra King, Pat Conroy's wife that you're referring to, I met her at the Southern Festival of Books when it used to be in Memphis every other year, and now it's in Nashville every year. And she had just written this book called The Sunday Wife. And I had this amazing identity to it because my husband is a pastor as well as a physician, and we just became really close friends. So that must be what you're referring to. But you fast forward 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 several years, and I was staying with her in Beaufort, South Carolina, for my book tour for John and Mary Margaret, one of my novels.
Right.
And she had just published this book about Pat called, can't remember the name of it, My Story with Pat Conroy. And it had a section about an angel that visited them during his last few days of life, just before he died, and some other mystical experiences. And I'm like, oh, wow, I want to do another anthology, and I want it to be about angels and mystical experiences and end-of-life and near-death experiences. And she said, I'm all in. Go for it. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, kind of the genesis of the idea of the book. Right. I'm interested to know, and I don't know if you know the answer, her husband, Pat, told him, don't write about this.
Right. For heaven's sakes, don't write about this. I mean, he probably used more colorful language than that. Uh-huh. And yet we did. And yet she did. And yet I have.
Do you know why he would have said that?
I don't know, because he was really a candid person in his writing. I mean, you know, he had a cottage industry out of stories that happened in his family, in his dysfunctional family, and all the abuse and various things. So why on earth he would say, don't write about your mystical and spiritual and angelic experiences, I don't know why. Uh-huh. But Cassandra and I both ignored him. And we wrote about it anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, perhaps, I'm speculating, of course, but perhaps in Sophie Burnham's foreword, she mentions that when we talk about, you know, being visited by angels or anything in the spiritual dimension, that at one point, going decades back, it was looked upon as, you know, some kind of mental illness.
Right. Na 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 na.
Right. Yeah. So I'm again speculating, but maybe that has something to do with Pat's take on it.
Yeah. Perhaps.
And then also in Sophie's foreword, she talks about that finally we have a book that discusses angels in a secular, from a secular point of view.
Right.
Yeah, so not having anything to do with any particular religion.
Right.
Just something in the spiritual realm.
Right.
That really is accessible to any of us. And
right.
I say any of us who, you know, may or may not be, you know, adhering to any particular religion.
Right.
Yeah. So how did you start gathering and getting in touch with authors and having authors and writers tell their stories?
Yeah. Well, it was even before I read Sophie's foreword. I guess it was a foreword, because she wrote that after she read what all we had submitted. Mm-hmm. But I was already thinking, I'm an Orthodox Christian, like Greek Orthodox, Antiochian Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
So my view of angels has to do with archangels and the angels, the seraphim and the cherubim, and everybody that's in the Bible, and I'm a Christian. But I wanted this book to have a larger scope than that. And so I invited people who I thought might have had any kind of spiritual experience to write about, including a group of poets, because I feel like poets can really touch on this really well. So, and I used a secular press. It wasn't a Christian press that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So when I found Sophie and asked her to write her foreword to it, she was thrilled at what I had done. There's only one author in there who's also an Orthodox Christian, Frederica Matthews Green, whose husband is an Orthodox priest, as mine is. So we both have a very specific view about angels and spirituality and mystical experiences, but the other 90% of the people in the book have completely different. I mean, you've got everything from people going to a mystic, you know, I mean, what's the word I'm trying to think of? When they go and visit
a medium,
to all sorts of different things. And there's also people writing about near-death experiences, end-of-life experiences. It's not all supposed to just be Christian. So, you know, I was real pleased with what came back. It's a good variety, I felt like.
Oh, my. Yeah, it is a good variety. And you write about a couple of your experiences in the book as well.
Well, two of them. In the introduction, I write about my experience with my aunt, and she was in a hospice facility in Mississippi. And I was with her near the end of her life, and she had this vision where, you know, I'm sitting there by her bed in the hospice facility, and she says, "Oh, look, do you see that peacock and those three beautiful men?" And I'm like, "Where, Barbara Jo?" And she's pointing to the door, and I go and I look out the door in her hospice facility, and I don't see anything. And she said, "I don't see them, Barbara Jo. Who are they?" She says, "Well, that's Dan and Billy and Jimmy Ray." So that was her husband, her two brothers, Jimmy Ray and Billy. Billy was my father, who are all dead. They're all in heaven. And she calls them the three beautiful men. She sees them. And the peacock is a symbol of the resurrection in a lot of Christian art. And she saw them very clearly, and I wrote about that in the introduction. That's one of the things you're referring to.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember at the time how close she was to?
A few hours before she died.
A few hours.
The same day.
Same day, yeah.
Same, she was really close to passing over, as we say, or
right.
Maybe we say in the South, I don't know, passing over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was that same day.
And this is the kind of experience many people allude to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, as the foreword mentions, that sometimes we're kind of, folks are afraid to talk about this.
Right.
Even to their own family members sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I shared it with my family members, and they were not afraid of it. And, wonderfully, that same day, one of my aunt's best friend's daughters came to see her, and she and I were with her, holding her hands as she passed, as she drew her last breath. I've had that experience with 5 different family members.
Wow.
Like being my mother, my father, my brother, my aunt, and the other wasn't a family member, a close friend.
Uh-huh.
And there's something very magical about that moment as they're passing over and you're holding their hand. It's like you're touching heaven and earth at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing. I mean, of course it's difficult, but it's also just quite a blessing to get to experience that.
Yeah. So when we talk about angels, or I'm going to use my own terminology, spirit and soul.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I can't help, but I have to mention the fact that we're recording this on the exact 1-year anniversary of my wife's grandfather's passing.
Oh, you tell me. Tell us more about that, Mark. That's so amazing.
Well, I can't help but think that he helped arrange this meeting, because you had emailed me a couple times. You gave me plenty of notice and heads up that you'd be talking about this book, and this book would be coming out. And we touched base last week, and turns out this was really the only time that you could record our interview. And I hadn't thought about the fact that today was the day until I said, let's do Monday. And then I realized, oh my, it's going to be the 1-year anniversary of his passing. And he, go ahead.
Synchronicity, that's all I was going to say.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And he was quite a powerful spirit. He was born premature in 1924. He was 2 pounds.
Whoa.
At his birth. No one thought he would live, especially in 1924 when they didn't have the technology they have today. He was one of the first 2 incubator babies in Memphis in 1924 at Old St. Francis. No, I'm sorry. St. Joseph's.
Okay.
The Old St. Joseph's Hospital. When an incubator was a brand new device, you know.
Wow, yeah.
But he pressed on as an infant, and he lived quite a life. He served in World War II, and not a huge man. He was very slight, as a matter of fact, you know. But 1 year ago, he had a stroke, and he collapsed, and they took him to St. Francis. And this alludes to one of your experiences as well. It gets to the point where, doctors and nurses tell you he's not going to come out of a stroke. He's 97
right.
years old. And,
right.
And then, they talk about the morphine drip and all those things to ease any kind of pain he might be in. And when the nurse began the process and the whole family was around him, we knew the end was coming.
Right.
With, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And he hung around for another couple hours.
It can happen.
And the nurse kept saying, he's a tough, tough little guy.
Right.
He didn't want to leave.
Right.
And I'm really rambling, but
no, this is a great conversation.
But he had a thing when he was in London. World War II had ended, and he was finishing out his duties, and he talked about the number 88 bus that was mentioned. I'm probably getting this story all wrong now that I'm fumbling over this, but
nobody's going to fact check you.
That's right.
You're all right.
The family will.
Oh.
So Mark, you got it all wrong. Yeah. But it became a thing in the family that he would talk about London, and he would always say 88. You know,
88.
88. Well, The week after he passed, all of us, me, my wife, my mother-in-law, you know, my brother-in-law, the number 88 popped up everywhere. And it did for weeks after, you know. And, you know, those are the kinds of signs that sometimes people don't talk about that.
Right.
That they think, well, maybe it's just coincidence. Right. I just happen to be seeing this. It's in my head, so it manifests itself. It's out there. But no, it was all over the place.
What a great story, Mark. Mm-hmm. And what a great day to be remembering him.
Yeah.
As we say in the Orthodox Church, memory eternal. That's a phrase we use as we commemorate an anniversary of a person's death.
Right.
Memory eternal.
Yeah. These are the kinds of stories that are in this book.
Well, there's a variety. You know, when I first started putting the book together and sent out invitations to people to send in essays and short stories and poetry, I thought there might be more about actual angels. And there are some about angels, but I also invited people to write about near-death or end-of-life experiences. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, quite a bit of that as well, and not just about angels. So I was real pleased with the variety. Only one short story came in. My friend River Jordan, who lives in Nashville, who's a fabulous writer, wrote a short story. Everybody else sent in essays or poetry. So I love the variety. I love anthologies anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I included my essay about my father.
Talk about that.
That one's called Hitting the Wall. I have two essays about him. The other one is in a different book. But this one, he was a marathon runner in Jackson, Mississippi, and the owner of, his name was Bill Johnson, Bill Johnson's Fidibity Sports. So he sponsored all these 4th of July, 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons, and all of this. But he got cancer really young, and when he was 68, he died from cancer. So he hit the wall. And in marathon running, that's an expression that happens at a certain number of miles into a marathon. And but he never hit it in the marathon. He always finished, you know, but of course he hit it in this. And I was with my mom and him the last week or two of their life. I was helping with their caregiving. And he was a very strong community member, sports member, civic member, and spiritual person. You know, so it was quite an experience to be with him, holding his hand right at the end of his life, as I did with four other people. You know, you just feel this mystical experience. It happens. I don't know how people can believe that this is it, that when you die, nothing else happens.
Right. Yeah. You know, in your story, because... you know, I haven't had a chance to read the entire book, but I read a few select ones, including yours. And you don't shy away from the difficulties that we encounter in those last days.
Right.
Hospice care, his prior doctor.
Right. Who wasn't helpful. I had to fire him because he would not allow the hospice nurses to give the amount of morphine he needed. So I fired that doctor and got a new doctor who said immediately, give whatever they need. And he respected the nurses more. And of course, from an ethical and moral point of view, I could have just increased the morphine myself. But I didn't feel okay doing that without permission from someone. You know, and that was part of the struggle of those last days with him. I mean, he was obviously dying. I didn't want to do assisted, I'm doing quotation marks, assisted suicide. But he was dying, and he was suffocating. Lung cancer, the struggle with lung cancer has been, has said it's almost like the pain of bone cancer. Those are maybe two of the worst two things to die from.
Right.
You know, so eventually I was able to give him more morphine and ask him. I said, you know, Dad, if I give you this next, you probably won't wake up. Is that okay with you? And he said, yes. You know, and we had that kind of communication going on, thankfully. And we had that kind of relationship, you know.
Yeah. And you also talked about how your mom really, speaking of, you know, the name of the piece, you know, hitting a wall.
Hitting a wall, yeah.
Did she hit a wall?
She did.
Yeah.
She just couldn't handle it anymore. I said, Mom, I've got this.
Yeah.
You know, she couldn't continue to be the caretaker. She had been his wife of almost 50 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really different. You know, I've thought recently about people who've had a spouse die or a parent die. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have a spouse die, there's a different kind of struggle and pain. And when you have a parent die, it's like they're of a generation that you expect they're going to die. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that it's not painful, but when you have a spouse die, that's right there with you, you know, and that's the person you've shared your life journey with. And so I said, Mom, you've got this, you know, and you can take a step back. Mm-hmm. And she wanted me to do that, thankfully.
Yeah. You know? And in the last moments of his life, both of you were there with him.
We were. We were each holding his hand. And I was able to say, you know, you can go now. I've got Mom. I'm going to take care of her. And I think I wrote the words, it was the most beautiful sunset I'd ever seen as he passed, because he was only 68, but he wasn't going to make it because he'd had a lung removed, you know.
And
having been a marathon runner,
right.
We're talking Boston and New York and all these marathons he had run. And he was a sports leader, a spiritual leader at his church, a civics leader, you know. So, you know, people were looking to him for how he was going to end this marathon, how he was going to do with it. And, he ended it with peace, but he had to give in to it. I mean, it's the only way it would work, you know.
Yeah. Were there any COVID-related stories that came out of this for you?
You know, no one submitted anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is this, 2023. Uh-huh. So I only asked for submissions to this in 2020 or 21.
Uh-huh.
Things were starting to back down. That's interesting that no one did submit anything, because I'm very aware. I have friends who had a spouse in a nursing home. They weren't not allowed to be with him.
Yeah.
You know, as he died, I have two friends who had that situation, but they were not writers. They weren't people that I asked to submit essays for this.
Mm-hmm.
But that was for both of them, that was awful experiences, to not even be in the room with your spouse as they died because of COVID.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do understand that, because I lost my sister in 2020.
I think you told me that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And she was in California. This was at the height of COVID. And I couldn't be there. And, you know, not having been there, there's a part of me that still, I'm not sure, accepts that it's real.
Wow.
You know.
Hmm.
I have her ashes.
Okay.
You know, but it's still very difficult to accept that it was real. I wasn't there.
How old was she?
Oh my gosh, she was only 52, 53.
Wow. That's awful.
52.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And you know, I got to speak to her through FaceTime, the day before she passed, but you know, the hospice care that she was in, the doctors, they thought she was going to survive through the weekend.
Right.
You know, that she's gonna, you've got a few more days, you can talk to
right.
her again. It didn't turn out that way, of course, and we got a phone call on a Saturday night the day after. And but it's such a blessing. And I saw this last year with my wife, and with, you know, my grandfather, my wife's grandfather, that being there is really an amazing blessing.
It is. And so I'm so sad that COVID stole that from so many people. That's what it happened. They stole it.
Yeah.
That experience. I mean, my really close friend whose husband died and she wasn't in the room with him.
Mm-hmm.
My husband was able. My husband, who's also a physician, was able to go in the room where he was when the wife couldn't. You know, the rules are kind of weird there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I think to back to last year, and you know, the entire family around him, everyone he loved, you know, all around. I mean, his daughter couldn't be there, but beyond that, you know, most of the family. So yeah, really, just a blessing to be there.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. And the number of people that wrote for my anthology wrote about being there, but a lot of people wrote about other things that were unrelated to death, that were related to people in their family who were like angels, quotation marks, to them.
Yeah.
You know, or mystical experiences, or even the chapter from Natasha Trethewey's book, Memorial Drive, was about her going to meet with a medium to try to connect with her dead mother, mm-hmm. you know, who was a spiritualist, the person she was meeting with. You know, those are unrelated. Now, she was trying to recapture something, not unrelated, but differently related. She was trying to capture something that had happened before her mother died, you know, and eventually she did find something that she was looking for through this medium that she met with.
Very interesting.
I know it was. You know, she was the, trying to think of the word, poet laureate of the U.S., but she was from Mississippi. So this was from her book, Memorial Drive, which is about her mother. Mm-hmm. It was an excellent book. So I got permission to write that chapter about her visit to a medium, because I just thought it was an excellent part of the story.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've thought about something similar myself with regard to my sister and trying to connect with her.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. What are some other stories that really stand out for you that were submitted?
Yeah, well, there were some that might not seem so powerful, but they're like, oh, really? Did that really happen? Suzanne Henley, my friend who actually passed away last week, Memphis author Suzanne Smith Henley, she just died last week. And she was an amazing Memphis woman. She was so involved. She was the first executive director of the Children's Museum and member of Idlewild Presbyterian, did all sorts of things in Memphis. And her story is about when she and several friends also went to visit a medium on a road trip. And there was a story, Suzanne had big, thick white hair, and she wore these tortoiseshell clips in her hair, and it was about spending the night somewhere where the tortoiseshell clips disappeared off a table and came back later, and it was in, you know, a relative's home, an antique place, and all this stuff. And it was beautifully written, and I love it. I'm sorry she's not here, because she would be at Novel with us on the 20th for our event, but she passed away last week. She was 81, I think. I can't remember exactly. So that was just a, you know, and everybody was like, "Ooh, what was that?" But you know, the spiritual world, no matter what your beliefs are, whether you're Christian or not or whatever, mm-hmm. I mean, I have to believe the spiritual world is there and that these things can happen.
Oh, yeah.
And so that one stood out to me greatly. I'm trying to think of others. The only, I'm Orthodox, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
And the only Orthodox story in there is Frederica Matthews Green, who's from North Carolina, and her husband is a retired priest. And her story is about how she and her sister shared a bedroom, and they heard noises coming from the attic when they were children. But it was voices singing, like angelic singing, but she couldn't quite recognize the music. It was decades later, after she became Orthodox, that she recognized it as the Byzantine chants of our Orthodox liturgy, which she and her sister heard from the attic when they were children. You know, of course I love that one, because I embraced it, because that's my spiritual life as well. It's just another example of how these things can invade our lives if we're open to them.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about some of the near-death experiences that some of your writers.
Well, one writer, Joanna Siebert, she's from Little Rock, Arkansas. She was like Arkansas Woman of the Year several times, and she was Episcopal deaconess and also a physician. Mm-hmm. So she got a lot of legitimacy there. And she writes about her grandfather, whom she calls an angel, and says three times he saved her life, near death, you know, experiences. And one, she almost drowned, and I forgot what the other two were. But they were real specific near death experiences that seemed like wouldn't have happened without spiritual, otherworldly, or angelic interaction. And in all three cases, she says it was her grandfather. Uh-huh. So she calls her grandfather her angel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's her story.
Yeah.
You know, and she's a spiritual counselor and, like I said, an Episcopal deacon in Little Rock now, and retired pediatric radiologist. Mm-hmm. Joanna Siebert. So that's her story about my grandfather, my angel. I remember that one really clearly. Yeah.
Yeah. How did this experience for you, seeing these stories, how did it, I'm just going to assume, enrich your feelings about the spiritual realm?
You know, I wasn't really that surprised by most of the essays. What I was most surprised by was the poetry, because I have edited four anthologies and the other three only had essays. And on this one, I decided to reach out and invite poets. And I think there's something about the way poets see and interpret the world that has a spiritual context to it that maybe other genres don't almost as much have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was my biggest surprise, was to read the poetry and go, oh, wow. Even though all the poems in the book weren't specifically about angels, they all had a spiritual or mystical aspect to them. You know, there was one about a homeless man. There's one about a woman whose last email from her daughter. There's one about someone trying to quit smoking cigarettes. I mean, you know, the subject matter almost didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It was the way they were written. I love poetry, and some of my best friends were poet laureates of various states, you know, Jennifer Horn in Arkansas and Bethann Finley in Mississippi. And so the poets that I invited, also at least three of them are African-American, and I feel like they bring also a different element of mm-hmm. spirituality to their writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really happy to have poetry in this collection.
Yeah. Cassandra writes about her father's passing, but before his passing, he has an experience with his mother, who has passed on, right?
Right, right. Well, she shows up to say, basically, that his wife is going to die. And she shows up from the dead to tell him that. And he shares that with Cassandra and her sister. And they're like, we don't believe you, you know. But eventually, they did believe him. And that was part of what her story was about in this collection.
Yeah.
You know, they knew. And she eventually said, I did believe you. I did believe you. But I mean, she. Yeah.
So can I read this?
Sure, please.
Yeah.
Do.
So it says, Daddy turned to face the three of us on the sofa, but his look was far away. In a daze, he stared somewhere beyond our line of sight. I came home from the hospital and got ready for bed. I was worried about your mama. Of course I was, but not scared or anything. Not as healthy as she is. If anybody could beat this, she could. I came in here and sat down to wait for y'all. Then I heard a knock on the door. Didn't make sense since I knew I hadn't locked it. I waited a minute and heard again. Maybe somebody broke down on the road, I thought. So I went to the door. He closed his eyes for a minute and rubbed his face before continuing with the story. And he says, when I opened the door, my mama stood there. Nancy Jane, sitting next to me, grabbed my hand and I felt goosebumps sweep over me. My grandmother had died over 30 years ago.
Right, right.
Yes. With that faraway look again, Daddy went on. He said, Mama had a dress she always wore to funerals, with a big black hat. It was pretty, not scary like it sounds. That's what she was wearing. But she wasn't a ghost, I swear. I saw her as plain as I see the three of y'all.
So he's talking to Cassandra and her two sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had forgotten that part of the story. Yeah, I mean, he saw her that clearly, and I'm not sure if her sisters believed or not, but she did. As she said at the end of the thing, "Daddy, it was your mama."
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knew it was. She knew it was his mama.
Yeah. That hit me on a rather personal note too, and I don't mean to make this about me today.
No, it's about all of us.
The night before my mom passed, and so this is when we were still in California. We lived in Orange County, and she was way out in the desert near Palm Springs. And she lived with a roommate in her house. But the night before she passed, I woke up in the middle of the night. This was a Saturday night. And I woke up wide awake, and I looked around the room, and my heart started pounding. And for a moment, I felt like death was in the room. And I laid there, and I just laid perfectly still. And I said to myself, I said, "It's not my time." And I remember, and I didn't see my mom's face. I didn't see her face. I don't remember, but I remember thinking about my mom in that moment. And I just laid there thinking, okay, please let this pass. It's not my time. And my heart was just pounding. It's not my time. And I finally went back to sleep. And I didn't tell anyone about this. But noon the next day, I got a call from my mom's roommate. And she never would call me. She would never. There was never any reason for her to call me. And she said, "Your mom passed away last night." And I know that was her.
Right.
I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me a minute to realize that, you know, I knew that was her.
Right.
And as though she were, before we're moving on.
Right.
She paid me a quick visit.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know, Sophie Burnham, who wrote the book about angels that attracted me to ask her to write the foreword.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she talks about all these experiences and the foreword. And she was happy that my book was coming out by secular press. And she says,
right.
"For many years, to talk of angels invited scorn. Belief bespoke of craziness, even schizophrenia, and certainly denoted a pitiful lack of intellect. But after 8 decades of personal observation, I fearlessly assert that angels are real. We swim like fish in spiritual waters, and like fish we know nothing of water until we're yanked out flopping and gasping on the grass. We're tossed back and swim away, saying, 'Was that real? Did I really see what I think?'" And so I was so pleased to find Sophie Burnham to write this foreword. And she was equally pleased that we were publishing with a secular press, you know, for the opportunity for people who don't think of themselves just as religious
to consider,
you know, this option. At the end, she says, "The stories in this anthology illustrate primarily those moments of illumination for which angels are best known, messages, love, death, is anything more important?" But then she says, "It's about the ability to love more deeply, the courage to be lovers and to bear angelic messages in this life." And these messages, just like the ones you're talking about, you know, that happened with your family, they come from a spiritual realm. I mean, I believe that strongly, or I wouldn't have edited or collected this anthology.
Yeah, and I love how in that foreword, she talks about all those little things, those little signs,
right?
You know, and of course we're hyper aware, perhaps, after someone passes, or maybe there's just
right.
a different level of awareness, not hyper awareness necessarily,
right.
but maybe a different level of awareness that we might have after that happens,
right?
You know. And that we see things, or
right.
But yeah, I agree. I've learned to really embrace and accept those moments and those little signs that it's not just coincidence.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this is. I'm so happy you did this.
Thank you, Mark.
I think you probably have room for another one.
Another what?
Another volume.
Oh. I'm considering an anthology with a collection of stories about homelessness, because I'm involved with the Room in the Inn and some other opportunities to help homeless people in Memphis, because we have a big population of homeless.
Yeah.
So that may be next instead, but I'll keep this in mind.
Yeah. No, that would be, you're right, that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sitting down again.
Thank you, Mark.
This has been really a wonderful experience.
Well, I'm glad it's also had a personal application to your life.
Oh, it sure has on quite a day, yeah. Thank you.
Memory eternal to your families.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Once again, the book is All Night, All Day, Life, Death, and Angels. And our guest has been author and friend, Susan Cushman. Thanks to Susan for sitting down with us here on Storyboard 30 from FM 89.3 WYPL. Susan's anthology is available locally at Novel Memphis or on your favorite book-selling platform. Thanks to our sponsors at the Memphis Library Foundation, and as always, to WYPL producer Vance Durbin, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3, this has been your host, Mark Fleischer, inviting you to join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with Memphians who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week.